And Karina, am I correct that this is your last meeting of the Interpretations Committee? So we have to be nice to Karina. So, please carry on.
Hello, everybody. Agenda paper four, continuous discussion of accounting for assets and liabilities on uncertain tax positions. At the last meeting in July, the committee asked us to prepare a paper on measurement of uncertain tax positions. In response to this request, this paper, first of all, provides background information on measurement of uncertainties, and secondly, proposes two possible approaches to measurement of uncertain tax positions. The paper also makes a recommendation to proceed with the project. This is because we think that developing guidance that responds to the diversity in practice would be an appropriate interim solution. We propose to require that uncertain tax positions are measured at their expected value when the level of uncertainty is high. We will prepare and present at a future meeting our proposal with respect to the scope of circumstances in which expected value should be applied if the committee decides to proceed with the project. We also propose to require that an entity should assume 100% detection risk. This means that it should assume that the tax authorities will examine the amounts reported to them and have full knowledge of all relevant information. And we have two following questions to you. Do you agree with the staff proposal to develop guidance on measurement of uncertain tax positions? And if yes, do you agree with the staff proposal in paragraph 59? If not, what alternative would you recommend? Thank you.
Comments? Bonnie and then Andrew?
So I do agree with the conclusion of detection risk. I think that's also consistent with how US GAAP looks at an ASC 740. On the first, I don't agree, and I would agree with view A2 for a couple of reasons. One is there is consistency with IFRS 15 with looking at the, I won't say options, but different views depending on the facts and circumstances. And I think that while it may create diversity in practice, I think it does allow consistency and does allow companies to look at the specific facts and circumstances of each UTP and better reflect what that answer might be. And then the third is it would allow convergence with US GAAP and how the one method that US GAAP allows.
Okay. Andrew?
Yeah, I actually had a question which I'm going to ask very nicely because it's your last meeting, Irina. But I wasn't totally clear on whether the staff recommendation just relates to the measurement of uncertain tax positions or relates to the filing as a whole. Or put another way, is does the proposal involve separating out the uncertain piece and applying potentially a different measurement to that and leaving the rest of the tax position as is? Or are we just clarifying the overall measurement requirements of IAS 12?
It was our intention, and it is our understanding of what the committee asked us at the previous meeting. To explore measurement of uncertain tax positions, so the positions which imply a certain degree of uncertainty.
So it's implicit in this, we'd need to define uncertain tax positions in order to apply a differential measurement requirements to those.
Yeah.
Okay. You mentioned differential measurement requirements. I think it's interpreting or clarifying what is meant by the one measurement requirement, which is the amounts expected to be paid. That would still remain, and what we're talking about is how to give better guidance to get more consistency on that.
I'm hearing slightly different things here. The recommendation says if there's a high degree of uncertainty, use expected value. If there's not a high degree of uncertainty, then you can use a single most likely amount. That seems to relate to the entire position. but the way the recommendation is worded, it talks about measuring uncertain tax positions. I'd say, and if you do that, then I think we need to go down the route of defining both uncertain tax positions and and explaining the threshold for a high degree of uncertainty, which would add some complexity.
Yeah, this is Sandy. I had a question, sorry to jump in, but I had a similar question. I'm not certain how we're defining uncertainty in a statistical way, because uncertainty would be the standard deviation around the mean, right? So a high degree of uncertainty would mean that you have a wide dispersion about the mean, and so an expected value might give you more of an average than you might want. I'm not certain that we're using uncertainty in the same way here as we would use in a statistical sense. Can you clarify that for me? Because I don't think that we're using uncertainty consistently in paragraph 38 or in view A1 and A2 when we compare it to 33. Because in 33, A and B, we say use expected value when you have a lot of observation, and most likely when you don't have a lot of observation. But you can have a lot of observations and still have, you can have a low degree of uncertainty or a high degree of uncertainty. So the number of observations and the degree of uncertainty aren't equivalent. So I'm a little confused on how we're using the term uncertainty here.
Okay, that's a fair point. Goes to Andrew's question about defining. Gary and Julie, how did FIN 48 define the term? Do you recall?
Off the top of my head, no.
Julie doesn't remember.
I think it's when you've taken a benefit, you're not fully certain you're going to ultimately sustain it. I mean, that's probably a little bit too, you know, probably a bit too high level, but that's the essence of it. Yeah.
Okay, I've got a bunch written down here, so I'm going to go with my list. Bruce, I think you were next here.
Thanks. I guess just looking at the two views, I mean, I was actually in the first one quite supportive of the staff view. I thought the measurement of these unexpected value to me made a lot of sense. I quite like that. On the detection risk, I didn't support the staff view. I guess my concern with that is that to a degree, the ISB has tried this approach around assuming 100% detection risk. If you get that this was joyously adopted into the SME standard as a assuming it was going to come into full IFRS, and it never appeared, but it did appear in the SME standard, and I mean, it became virtually impossible to apply. It became very difficult, and I accept that the people using that obviously wasn't as complex as some of the other guys under full IFRS would have, but it did create some challenges around it. So I preferred the other one in the detection risk, where it kind of was more around the basis of including in the measurement.
Okay, Reinhardt?
In reading the paper, I recognize that the staff took the direction from the committee, but I felt a little bit, using an expression, Wayne, you might be familiar with, like the dog that caught the car, in the sense that I wasn't sure what to do with it now that we had the paper, because it brought back memories of all the previous discussions that have been held at the board level, the exposure drafts on income taxes, and the wide variety of views that were expressed. I think one of the key stumbling blocks, if I recall correctly, in some of the previous discussions, was around the use of the expected value method or proposal to require its use. So I'm not convinced that within existing IFRSs we could come up with an interpretation that would be uncontentious. I share a lot of the comments that others have made about how do you define high uncertainty, and if it's not where this highly uncertain, does that mean that you default to the other methods that were listed in the paper and that, quite frankly, are used in practice? And so I thought perhaps one way to move forward is to see if there's an appetite on the part of the board to issue some guidance on this subject, recognizing that we talked about specific aspects of this issue at our previous meetings, which led to the discussion that there's a real gap in the guidance, if you will, particularly on uncertain tax positions from an IFRS perspective, and can we move that forward? And as I say, I'm not sure, convinced that we as a committee can do so, given the divergent views that are held and some of the feedback that has occurred in the past on this particular subject.
Let me ask the question differently then. If the staff had never said expected value and had come back and said, we need to measure uncertain tax positions, and I'm looking to you as somebody who lives north of FIN 48 land, they didn't take expected value. They took a different measure of central tendency. Seems to have worked. So if the staff just said, we need to measure it and we'll get back to you, and one of the alternatives was the FIN 48 measurement, which our statistics people tell me is the median, would that quiet your discomfort?
Well, on that specific point, Wayne, I think there are different views as to whether that threshold from a U.S. GAAP perspective, more likely than not, some would say it's a two-step approach, whether that fits within IFRS and a best estimate approach. I know some people use that in practice from an IFRS perspective. There's others who believe that's not necessarily reflective of best estimate.
Okay, that wasn't really my question. My question is, does it work? And is it more workable than expected value?
Sorry, it certainly works, because the experience in the U.S. is it works, and Canadian GAAP was very similar to U.S. GAAP prior to the adoption of IFRS, and it certainly works.
Okay. All right. Charlotte, you're next.
I agreed with the staff analysis on the detection risk, but like Bonnie, I prefer A2 for the how you actually weight it. I think it would give you more scope for using your best judgment of what would be the best estimate. There are times when the mean might be the best estimate, times when the mode might be, and times when the median is. And it does mean, from a slightly biased perspective, it does get you a view that you could actually converge with US GAAP. So,
If you wanted to. Yeah.
Heaven forbid. But I do agree with Andrew's point. I do think there is a question of unit of account as to where your position is. Is it at transaction level? Is it within a class of transactions, a type of judgment you're making on tax, or is it just at the overall income tax level? I do think you need to resolve that.
Cash?
Yes. Pretty similar to the comments of Charlotte and Moni. I appreciate the effort trying to resolve that measurement, but it seems like it's a measurement issue is too broad. I'm leaning toward a view A2, but I'm not sure that resolve or minimize the divergence. I think it could be more fundamental approach might be necessary.
What would a more fundamental approach look
just
like?
It's a broader issue to the board, and recommend to the board to reassess this tax.
Talking about, well, okay, and that I'm going to be more aggressive than I might otherwise be. We're talking about the measurement of current tax. So if David Tweedy had his fondest wish and there was no deferred tax, this issue would still exist. We're talking about the measurement of a current liability.
Yeah.
And you still believe that needs to be part of a bigger package?
Would be. Well, at least maybe to just focus on this issue, but looking at the staff paper, because to me, there are some criticisms we received already, and I'm not sure whether we answer properly, other than approaching differently. So
okay.
That's why.
I'll stop the cross-examination. Mikhail?
Yes. Yeah, then I agree with Reinhard here that we have, to my understanding, had a lot and lot of discussions around these measurements and if we should change these models in IS 37, etc. And to my understanding, that has not come to a conclusion, so to speak. And a lot of people have been opposing the models proposed. In this particular case, in my mind, we do not have a problem, so to speak. I mean, we apply the methods and models from IS7 and also on this kind of current liabilities, as you said. And then you have different models depending on what is the best appropriate for the situation the present situation that you are standing for. And of course, if you have potentially US, I don't know, but potentially you have a lot of tax cases and you would have good statistics from outcome of these and so on, it's possible potentially to build a theoretical model. In another country, that might not be available, that kind of information to do such kind of judgment, and then you have to have another model. And in my mind, it's clear that IS37 starts with that it's the management judgment that is the leading star, and you should try to be as good as possible to estimate this outcome. And if there's many items or many issues, like a warranty, for instance, then you have this expected value model. But if you then have a single one, then it's more likely than not that is the normal model to use, so to speak. So in my mind, it's quite straightforward that the A2 should be supported in this case.
Tony, you're next.
I guess I saw the staff paper as a first step as part of the analysis. My sense is there is some diversity in practice in this area at the moment in terms of how people approach uncertain tax positions. And I can see some scope to actually interpret, because we have something in IS12 that says that you measure current tax at the amount you expect to pay. And I would think that we could focus quite narrowly on that and interpret. I think there are a couple of quite big questions hanging over it. One of which is, I think, probably both of which have already been asked. One is around what are we applying it to? How do you define an uncertain tax position? Or are you just looking at current tax more broadly? And then secondly, the important question of what is your unit of account? And I'd be inclined to see where we can get with those before finally deciding whether we can or can't do it. But I think it will be helpful to go ahead and try to do something. My sense of the two specific questions is that I agree with the staff about detection risk. So I would concur with that. I don't agree with the staff in terms of measuring at expected value. I think that was tried with the IS37 amendments. It was tried with the IS12 amendments, both of which didn't go ahead. It was tried with IFRS 15 and then abandoned. So I would be inclined to say the best way to measure something is using the technique that best reflects those particular facts and circumstances. So go with an approach like IFRS 15 and think about whether you add the mode to the other two methods that you already have, median, whatever it is, to the other two methods that you already have. So yeah, I think I would support going ahead, but I do think it would be important to clarify exactly what it is we're talking about and what the unit of account would be.
Carl? Okay, there you go.
I have the same view of 2009 exposure draft respondents expressed in paragraph 19. My feeling is that all tax position contains some level of uncertainty, yes. And I do think it's binary in nature. I prefer to use expected value than probability weighted. I think if you express...
Can I interrupt a minute, Carl? I'm sorry. At the IASB, when we use the term expected value, we mean probability weighted.
Okay.
So what did you prefer as an alternative?
The more likely, sorry.
The more likely than not.
the more.
So that would be essentially the FIN 40, the U.S. standard.
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify. I'm sorry.
Okay. As expressed in paragraph 20, I'm not surprised that tax authority respondents prefer this approach of the probability weighted, because it exposes risks of companies. So I think using this approach, we will create some additional tax risk for companies. And I do think it's binary. You have a deduction and you believe it, or you don't have a deduction. And you have to behavior in this binary nature.
John.
I tend to support the staff paper. I mean, I think it's early days, because I think there are questions as to, are we talking about the measurement of the tax liability itself, or are we talking about some other individual positions to which there's uncertainty? And that, I think, is not, to me, that issue of the unit of account, I think, is important, even though the paper says it doesn't really matter if you use expected value. I happen to think that, I mean, I don't agree with the comments that you sort of pick which measure you best want yourself. That seems to be just a choice to pick and choose a measure. There ought to be a measurement attribute, and you pick and the standards ought to help you determine which is the most appropriate one, rather than saying, well, in this case, I want more likely than not. In this case, I want most likely. In this one, I want expected value. So it seems to me we ought to try and do something to clarify which of those measurements would be more appropriate in which circumstances. I think the problem with what's proposed is that using high and low uncertainty as a threshold for different means you're going to have to determine what that threshold is, and I suspect that will become a torturous exercise in trying to determine what's high uncertainty to which you would have to use expected value, and what's less than high uncertainty where you would have a choice between three different methods. So I wouldn't say let's not try, but I think that could prove pretty difficult. And I think when we actually go to do that, I think the issue about what are we talking about, what's the unit we're talking about is going to become critical, and that may be even more difficult to define. On the detection risk, I agree completely with the staff position.
Full circle to Andrew, and then I'm going to try and into the phones, excuse me.
Yes, I mean, my sense of this, I think this all started out with a question actually about scope, IAS 37 or IAS 12 in a particular fact pattern. I feel the scope question is something this committee can clarify, because to me, if it's tax, it's in IAS 12, and that's clear enough. There seems to be a strong agreement on detection risk, and I agree with that agreement. I think that's also sufficiently clear in IAS 12, because you measure tax based on the tax laws. What's left is what we mean by expected in the context of IAS 12, and I don't think that's just for some definition of uncertain tax positions. That's the measurement principle in IAS 12, and I tend to think that's not an interpretive question for this committee. That's something the board's going to have to take a view on, reflecting on the history of the 2009 ED as well as these more recent discussions. So, you know, perhaps picking up on Tony's comment, I think that there are things that we have a good prospect of being able to clarify with the tools available to this committee, but clarifying the fundamental measurement principle might be too big a fish to fry.
Yeah, having interrupted Carl, I would also observe that 12 in its current manifestation predates our current use of the word expected. It was a much broader sort of a general term, and we have at the IASB evolved to the view that it means probability weighted, but it's pretty clear that the IASC didn't have the same appreciation. Gary, board member privilege, and then we'll go to the phones.
And just a couple of thoughts, and they'll come from a preparer's point of view as opposed to a U.S. preparer, which I'm both. But I think view A2 is, to my way of thinking, is much better than view A1. But as I look at the three choices in there, I guess they're here because there's a presumption they give different answers given the same underlying set of facts. And if they don't pretend to give different answers, then I think we should pick one. Now, I think I'm actually in favor of the more likely than not, you know, the FIN 48 model for a number of reasons, and not that it's perfect, but one is I think it's pretty widely distributed and reasonably well understood. Two, when I look at, if you're, say, a preparer from one of our countries, that say Canada or Japan, where you might happen to be a U.S. GAAP at the consolidated level, many of your subsidiaries are likely to be IFRS subsidiaries for reporting purposes. They have the same set of facts. At the parent company, you're reporting in your legal accounts a U.S. GAAP number, in your statutories, and which would, I think, in part drive to the extent you have really tight book tax regimes, you'll be working under IFRS for given facts. So you just think of the complexity, and this is hard to do on a good day. And all of a sudden, same facts, US GAAP in one reporting direction, IFRS in another direction. Life would be a lot easier if you just picked the FIN 48 model, the more likely than not estimate. I think as you, even if you went to view A2, which I could support, even though I prefer just to pick one, so I think about, you know, reasonable, if assuming the three expected value most likely or more likely give different numbers, now you're in, and the decision is whichever estimate gives the entity to better depict the amount payable, I think we need to face with reasonable people can reasonably differ, whether it's your chief accountant and tax place president against their senior management versus your auditors. So I think by saying all three, if you got something really complex, the reality is you probably need, I think, to assess all three. And then you're into which one depicts the better answer. And there I think you're easier to pick one, and therefore you're not doing the other two assessments. And I think, again, go back to the practicalities of consolidating financial statements, is you're better off having one flowing all the way through from top to bottom.
Going to the phones. Fei Long?
Yes, I prefer VOA 2 because I think for VOA 1 it is too strict for measurement. Why we did not put such methods in other standards such as IFRS 15 or IAS 37? Sounds like it will force consistency, but a lot of judgment in applying how to assess whether the uncertainty is high or not high, how to limit the numbers of outcomes, etc. Although staff may propose future scope analysis, I wonder, significant judgment may still drive to different assessments for above aspects. So I would like to apply VOA 2 that permitting different methods or just use the same estimate methods as IFRS 15.
Martin?
Well, in a perfect world, I would fully support the expected value method under the label probability weighted. But in practice, I mean, if you ask a lawyer or someone else to give you professional judgment and expertise on a specific case, you wouldn't get so reliable probabilities for each and every scenario. So what they in general do is they give you a should opinion or so. So I'm a little bit with Tony that one probably need a broader room with regard to each and individual case to arrive at the measurement which really best reflects facts and circumstances. On the other hand, also the unit of account might come into consideration, because if you think what was our starting point was something where we paid already to the government, and it was the question come that was addressed to us whether this payment then is an asset and how this asset should be measured. So therefore, I believe that there should be more flexibility. On the other hand, I guess for sure, this is an issue of well, critical accounting policies and estimates. And if well, there is a specific well, methodology the which was used then, this should be clearly disclosed.
Okay. Sandy?
Yeah, I support the staff's view on detection risk. I don't support view A2 because I think it was John who made the point of, you know, you can select whichever one you want. And generally, as a user organization, we generally support expected value because not because we don't see the inherent flaws of expected value, but because it creates some rigor in the thought process. My concern in view A1 is the use of level of uncertainty and how that's actually being used. So I'm not really supportive of view A2, and I see some issues associated with how A1 has been articulated here. But I do agree with some of the other comments which have been made about this being a broader conceptual issue and not something that was easily resolved before. So how is it that we make that decision now? I would prefer something that gives one answer, not a selection of approaches that a company can use, because there will be no disclosure with respect to how that selection was made. And, you know, investors are used to making decisions under uncertainty, but they'd like to know sort of how you picked it so they can decide which part of the distribution they want to be in.
Okay. Chung Wu and Julie, and then I'm going to ask three questions.
Thank you. I respect Gary's suggestion, but I'd like to give a more balanced view of some board members. In my case, you know, it seems to me the E15 is the newest and most recent standard, so such measurement method might be respected rather than just doing some kind of convergent work with the US GAAP. So we better consider the strength of the E15 first, and I mean the IFRS 15. So if that's not work in this situation, then we can do a kind of convergent work. If that IFRS 15 is better, then we'd rather ask the amendment of US GAAP rather than we follow the US GAAP. That's my just personal opinion.
Okay. Julie, and then Sue, and then I really am going to cut it off.
Just a fact to make up for my lack of knowledge to your question earlier. I got some help. So US GAAP, instead of defining the scope in 1048 as this is accounting for tax uncertainties and then having to define that high, low, et cetera, it articulates it as this is how to account for tax positions. So the positions that you have taken in your returns, or maybe a position you've taken to not even file a return, and that may, you know, be involve some judgment. So it's the position you've taken, and then given the position you've taken, file, don't file, et cetera, how you filed, what's the right measurement of that position? Obviously, if to the extent there's an element in your filing that's just, you know, slam dunk, as we say in the U.S., then any notion of probability or whatever is just 100%, it is what it is, and hopefully the math would then come out that way. When it's not that, though, then the interpretation tries to tell you how to do the math. But instead of trying to write interpretation for the soft ones, this is how to measure all your positions, and presumably the ones that are solid, you know, the math comes out with a solid number regardless, and then the math comes out with a softer number for the ones that have some softness to it.
Thank you. Thank you, Julie. That's helpful. Sue, last call.
And I'll be quick because I know you want to wrap up. I'll just second what Chung Wu said. It seems to me that IFRS 15 is telling you to use the method that, you know, gets you to best estimate the amount you actually think you'll receive, and similarly I would have thought IAS 12 is trying to get you to the best method to work out what you actually think you're going to pay. So the starting logic I would have thought would be similar, so it would be a good starting point. And also, I'm not sure whether the board's ever explicitly blessed more likely than not, so that might just be another thing to think about.
Okay. I think that's three questions. I heard a couple of people say there isn't a problem here. What are we talking about? Mikhail, I think you were in that camp. That would suggest that we quit, stop work. How many support stopping work? One, two. Fei Long, do you support that? Fei Long.
Yes.
Do you support stopping work on this issue?
Stop.
You would stop work. Martin?
Do not stop.
Do not stop.
Right.
Okay. Sandy?
I would not stop.
Okay. That's only three. I assume the rest of the committee is in favor of continuing to work, so we continue. The second question I will ask, and then I'm going to make a proposal rather than a question, is I think there was at least a fair amount of, with maybe one or two exceptions, agreement around detection risk. How many support assuming full detection?
Eight in the room.
Eight in the room. Fei Long?
Assume.
Assume. Martin?
Yes.
Assume. Sandy?
Yep.
Assume. Okay. So that piece of the picture is done. Now a proposal. I think it is previous or premature for us to get into details now of the measurement, recognizing that the staff wanted to bring back the issue of measurement. I think you've heard a lot of guidance from the committee on different approaches to handling the problem, different possibilities, the IFRS 15 that Sue mentioned and that I think thought was the basis of the staff analysis. Was one, Gary put forward the idea of let's just pick one and be done, and why not pick the U.S. answer, and a couple others scattered around. So what I would propose is that the next paper you see, which will be written by Tammy, will focus in more detail on, I heard two issues. One, clarifying scope. What are we talking about here? And the other, examining, and I take the point that somebody made that the measurement objective is to attempt to identify the amount that you expect to pay in the old-fashioned use of the word expect. So that we'll take as our starting point. I think that's what I heard was the direction of the staff. And we will pursue more approaches to measurement, one or more, that satisfy that. Philippe, you want to come in?
Yeah, just on this point, I think Andrew made a very good point, and some others too, that the unit of account of what situations, what positions, is it a position or a series of positions that you are attempting to measure, and that I think is very important for what method of measurement is
point
more,
taken.
Most appropriate.
Point taken. Okay, so the proposal is that I'm making to you is we'll come back to you on measurement, including unit of account, and that will include a discussion of scope. I won't promise November, but we will do that as expeditiously as possible. Is that acceptable to the committee? Anybody object? free-for-all. Anybody on the phone object?
Nope.
No.
No.
Okay.